Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Everybody, welcome to Shaken and Disturbed. I am Darren Karp. John, I'm going to give you a word
right at the beginning.
This is John Thrasher. I want to give you guys, I'm going to give you a, for those on video, smash that subscribe button and you can see John doing, ready, John, do a teapot.
I knew exactly. Wait.
Yep. There you go. But okay. Another thing. See, this is what John did.
Yeah, tell him.
He did this on our NMR and I just called him a teapot and then he really couldn't deny it.
I couldn't. I was like, I was telling Darren on the show, I was like, I'm so annoyed that you were so quick to know that that's exactly right. What I just did. So thank
that's
you
exactly
for that.
Right.
Listen, but it's welcome. Better than, let me just show everybody. Let me see if I can do it. Count Chocula.
Oh yeah, with the chair.
I can't get the chair to do it now, of course.
I
but
know. Well, because you're blurred. But
Darren,
it was
Darren
amazing.
Bullies me. That's the main thing. Yeah.
And welcome to Shaken and Disturbed. I feel like that's the perfect intro. This week's case... It's
oh boy.
Different?
Yeah, it is
than
different.
We've covered.
It's a little bit, let me just say this. Has to do with surgeries that go awry. As you might see from the title, which we haven't landed on just yet as we record this, but I'm sure it will be alluding to things. You know, if you're not into
we can
botched
call it just surgeries.
Surgeries
gone awry. Yeah.
Something like that, right? That's what's up. And I do realize that some people have a hard time with that. So we thought we would mention that at the top of the show so you don't, you know, feel too disturbed, for lack of a better word.
But just given that warning up top. But honestly, this is a true crime case. Anyone, you know, like, be prepared for that. That's all I'm going to say. It's just a little bit different. That's it.
Be prepared for that. There you go.
Be prepared for that. Yeah. Let's go ahead. Go ahead, Johnny.
Let's get right into it. That's right. Dr. John Ronald Brown, he was born in 1922. Here's another John causing chaos, guys.
Ronald is like, it's like John Ronald is tough. Is a tough.
That's a tough one, right?
My face goes right at John Ronald.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're on Facebook, if you're on YouTube, check out Darren's face.
Just unsubscribe immediately.
Can I screenshot that and use it as the thumbnail?
Not that one this week, buddy.
I was just going to say, Darren never has any argument with anything that I ever send to her because she knows she looks good. That was the one where she was like, nope.
Darren Goldberg reached out to me once when I like Instagrammed it, and he was like, by the way, do you know that this is the thumbnail shot? And I was like,
Oh, were you okay with it? Which one was it?
He was like, is John trying to sabotage you? And I was like, every day. No, he didn't say that.
Oh, okay.
But kept
what
up
was
that
it?
Narrative.
I'm so curious now.
Something where I looked absurd, you know, in some sort of way.
Well, let me say this, and I don't mean to break this off right in the very first
sentence?
Detail.
We didn't even get to anything. We don't even know when he's born.
We haven't gotten to anything. That's right. But, you know, the reality is the more dramatic and weird looking those thumbnails are, the better they do on YouTube, because that's how YouTube has taught us to our best practices for getting people to watch YouTube. So
sacrifice for my work. So
let's see what the thumbnail is, by
we'll
Sunday,
see.
Darren. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Anyway, John Ronald Brown was born in 1922. He was raised Mormon. And by 1940, John graduated high school at the age of 16, actually.
Wow.
He was actually
like my dad.
Oh, really? Wow. I didn't know that about your dad. He was drafted into the army and scored extremely high on all of his entrance exams. As such, the army sent him to medical school where he studied to become a doctor like his father. Now, remember, 1940, World War II is on the brink. There's a lot going on in terms of the military, especially in the United States. But in 1947, he earned his medical degree from the Utah School of Medicine and spent nearly 20 years working as a general practitioner in San Francisco and Los Angeles before deciding to go back to school to become a cosmetic surgeon. Now, Though John passed all of his written exams with flying colors, he actually failed the oral part of the exam and was actually not granted a license to become a surgeon. So this is a really important detail to today's story. So he passed all of his exams, things were moving, but he wasn't licensed to become a surgeon. He knew how to be a surgeon, he just simply wasn't licensed to be one. As I mentioned, this
Which,
out, yeah.
in theory, better to know it than necessarily be licensed, but yes, it's important to know that he wasn't fully equipped.
That's right. And however, this wasn't enough of a deterrent for John, who actually was determined to find a way to practice surgery. He seemed to have some sort of passion for it. Well, many of John's patients in those days were gay, lesbian, and transgender. And in the late 60s, being a member of the LGBT community was, of course, much more stigmatized throughout the US than it is in many parts of the country today. We'll get into more of those details as we go on, but while other doctors were turning away transgender patients who were looking to receive gender affirmation surgery, Dr. Brown's medical practice began to gain notoriety, actually, amongst the trans community for being a place where they could seek help, seek the help that they were looking for. And people actually began referring to it as, quote, the House of Dreams.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like one of those things. It's tragic in a lot of ways because today it's still not exactly easy. We'll get to some of those details about today later in the episode, but especially back then in the late 60s, I mean, it was honestly kind of experimental in a lot of ways. The first gender affirmation surgeries took place in Berlin actually in 1931 and were performed on Lily Elbe, I'm hoping I'm saying that right, who was a Danish artist who was assigned male at birth. Lily underwent a series of five experimental surgeries, tragically passing away from medical complications shortly after the fifth surgery. So here's what I'm saying. Just 30 years prior to this, they were still undergoing the very first surgeries for transgender
And
people.
nothing's perfect, I mean, obviously this is still sort of new, or it's and certainly in the news a
Yeah.
lot more than it had ever had been, for better or for worse. So I think it's only
Right.
going to get better. But yeah, I mean, I think when you start messing with your
Yeah.
genitals in any sort of way,
Yeah.
certainly hormones,
Right.
you can't really guarantee how that's gonna
Yeah.
make you act or be, or if you're gonna have the same sensation there that you would before, because obviously it's surgery. That
Right.
doesn't mean that you shouldn't get it. I'm just saying that it's
Right.
obviously not perfect. Like
Yeah, it's
there's
a
going to
sensitive
probably be
part of
something. Yeah.
the body with lots of nerve endings, for lack of a better word there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, so
That's
affirmation.
how I said it. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
exactly. Yeah. So affirmation surgeries slowly became available across Europe over the course of the next several decades, although, they were still very highly experimental.
It wasn't until 1966, actually, that Johns Hopkins University opened their gender identity clinic, which is really progressive,
That's, I agree, yeah.
for that time, and became the first academic institution to provide this surgery and teach new doctors how to administer it to patients safely. So it's pretty great. And Johns Hopkins is obviously known for its medical
Oh yeah,
in
for
every
sure.
sort of way. So despite his lack of a license to practice surgery, John began developing experimental methods of affirmation surgery. John even presented the technique at a medical conference in 1973, where it impressed and earned him the respect of many successful and highly respected surgeons. I mean, so far, the way that we're presenting this, it's like he obviously is capable, right? Like a
Right.
licensing is just really a paper that says that you're qualified to do this. Again, I'd rather have someone definitely be qualified to do it rather than be necessarily
Of
licensed to do
course.
it.
Yeah.
But so we're sort of like hanging it all on the balance, but of just like being licensed. But in theory, and I'm not saying where this is going, but I obviously this is a true crime story. In theory, this isn't necessarily like an Elizabeth Holmes, like I'm presenting you a surgery that there's no way there can work. He's presenting it in front of other respected surgeons,
It's
just
true.
saying, just.
It also makes me wonder if these other surgeons who are, applauding him are aware that he is not licensed, because it's like, well, should you be doing all that? Because it does set a
Right.
weird precedence if people who don't have the license are still out there doing these experimental surgeries and potentially risking the lives because they're not following the protocols, et
But
cetera,
in theory, just go with me. I'm not saying this is what happens, but in
Yeah, I
theory,
agree with you.
if John presents it, but he's not being licensed, is separate of whether or not that is an effective or good surgery or
Yeah,
not,
I agree
considering,
for sure.
okay, yeah, that's what I'm
Yeah.
trying to say is like, I don't, it's unclear at this point what anyone thinks, only because he's presenting it in front of highly respected surgeons. Like,
and
there's,
by the way, sorry to
he's not in
you.
Some dark closet, yes. You know, using rusty tools. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Not yet. But well, I will say this.
That's not what I'm saying yet. Yeah.
No, I know. Yet. But every country, I've learned this too, and I didn't know this until I became friends with doctors. Every country has a different kind of medical board and medical licensing board. And like what, you know, for example, I have a friend of mine that I played tennis with a lot in New York City who was a doctor in Australia, but he would never in a million years be able to pass a board exam here in the United States. So like he became a professor and was like, you know, a med school professor. And there are different, you know, professions that you can get in. But like apparently the United States, it's really hard to become a doctor here. And so maybe that's, to your point, he may be qualified in other countries,
right,
which we might get to as well. But
exactly. Yeah. He might have qualified in, no, not to this country, but he might have qualified in Turkey, where he sure wouldn't have qualified in the United States.
Yeah, you all hear fair about a lot of people going to Turkey for things. So that's a good example there.
Well, a Real Housewife of New Jersey, even though her husband is a plastic surgeon, went to Turkey to get a nose job because she found him on Instagram. So I know what I'm talking about, John.
Okay, I love the little Bravo. We should do a Bravo.
Should I say Dr. Brown?
Dr. Brown. We should do a little Bravo thing every single episode. Like, what's the Bravo connection? I like the way you
made
that.
Maybe we could. Great. I'm sure Bravo's going to be very happy with me connecting yeah, I'm this sure with True Crime. I'm like, okay, you see, this rape of this girl is like this episode of, you know? Anyway. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll
see what we can. But anyway, right. Dr. Brown saw thousands of patients, many of whom had extremely positive experiences and had nothing but good things to say about him. That's important. While most physicians required patients to undergo long, costly psychological evaluations, hormone therapy, spend years living as a woman or man before mm-hmm. they would help them surgically transition, again, at great cost, sometimes upwards of at least $20,000, if not more, depending on what you want to do, a visit with Dr. Brown was much quicker and more cost effective. So he's, if we just take those statements as they are, he's just playing the market. He's doing something that he likes. He's playing the market. He's being competitive in the market. However, despite his successes, performing what essentially amounted to back alley surgeries came with numerous dangers. There's a reason he's probably he's cheaper and quicker. For one thing, John had no access to any of the resources that came with working in a hospital. Instead, performing surgeries in his own private office. Yeah. Not a garage with rusty tools, though.
Well,
private office. Well, he eventually, though, turns his garage into an operating room where he performed procedures on patients. So started out great, not looking good. Although, technically, I mean, he's not.
You really are defending
anyone.
This guy. You really like that he's doing these back alley
surgeries.
Well,
I think it's important to sort of. I think there's probably a lot of that going on right now.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you.
That can't do this. And so I'm trying to defend the people that are trying to do the right thing because to some extent, right? Like, so far, what we know, he hasn't forced anyone into this situation. He's
He's
not recruiting patients or something into there. So I just want to keep that in mind.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Reality and stuff. But yes, obviously, as a true crime story, I'm not defending this fucking asshole, but I'm defending if human beings were. But another issue, obviously, that arose over time, despite the obvious ones, was that patients who visited Dr. Brown had no access to pre or post surgical care beyond John himself, which is crucial, at least I imagine, for transgender people. So, I mean, literally, even if you're getting any type of surgery, you want you need pre and surgical care. Obviously, if you're dealing something with highly sensitive areas, again, mixed with hormones, you certainly need that.
And, you know, I just keep thinking, listen, I have a few trans friends and, you know, one of whom I'm very close with, who's shared a lot of his transitional like issues, you know, for lack of a better word there. And what just keeps coming to mind as we get through this episode is like, it's just so sad that like, this is what it takes for trans people to feel like themselves. They have to go through, you know, whether it is just lack of funding and resources or, you know, just the desperate need to feel like yourself. It's just, this is what is so challenging about the trans issues of today, even, you know, this is the still the 60s, and you can see it's decades long, and so hopefully this, and we'll get to the current day situation later in the episode, but you can get a snapshot at least of the challenges that trans people face just trying to be themselves and feel, you know, feel like themselves in the body that they were given. So anyway, as John performed more and more surgeries, he seemed to become fixated on perfecting his technique, the one that he was applauded for, rather than providing holistic care to his patients. One of John's earlier patients, a trans woman named Elizabeth, was initially very satisfied with her affirmation surgery until she was about a year post-op and then began having very serious complications. Dr. Brown, of course, provided no follow-up care and left her to seek medical help for her problem elsewhere. By practicing without a license to operate, John was not beholden to any of those regulations that are put in place to keep patients safe. So that is the downside of this. Yes, you know, he knows how to do it, but there's a system in place that is just, you know, pre, during, and post operation that's
Right, he
just
only
as
knows how to
important.
do one of the components, or at least that's the
Exactly.
component he knows how to do well. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a great way to put that. Another patient arrived at Dr. Brown's office believing that their visit to be a pre-surgical checkup was meant to be just a pre-surgical checkup, but awoke hours later to find that the doctor has an had anesthetized them and
Oh.
operated on the spot. So this was meant to just be like, hey, let's, you know, this is a checkup, and then they are, you know, anesthetized and then wake up with a gender affirmation surgery. That's crazy, actually. A
Wow.
growing number of these horror stories began to stem from this garage practice. Some patients went in for surgery expecting vaginoplasties, but simply had their genitals removed. Now we're getting into the like, okay, what is your motive here, guy? You know, others were left with unsterile surgical sites on their bodies that became infected and left the patients needing to use a colostomy bags for the rest of their life.
Oof.
So we're really getting into, you know, I'm starting to think that maybe he actually maybe is losing his own skills and like mind to some degree, because things seem to be going well in the beginning and now there's lots of errors and botching going on here.
Right. I mean, kind of the only rationale I could see it would be if he's trying to gain the trust of the community so that way he could
Right.
potentially get more victims who are
Right.
volunteering to go see him so he doesn't have to get it
Right.
out. But it also could be maybe it has nothing to do with something necessarily nefarious, but he's
Yeah,
lost his
no.
mind or he doesn't realize or
That's
he
what I
doesn't
mean,
have the
yeah.
education. So, yeah, there's like a number of different theories that are going on. But it is odd that it started out decently well in the
Yeah,
beginning.
yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, you know, other
Trying to do
doctors applauding him.
something
Yeah.
good. Yeah, exactly.
So though Dr. Brown specialized in genital surgery, he offered a number of other gender affirmation cosmetic procedures as well. One patient actually recounted, quote, he'd shoot silicone anywhere you wanted it. For $200, he'd do breast surgery. For $500, he'd do cheeks, breasts, and hips. After
Eeks.
injections, I
Wow.
know, after injections, you had to lie flat on your back for 3 days so the silicone wouldn't go anywhere. He plugged holes with crazy glue, end
What the
quote.
fuck?
Call me crazy with a K, but I don't know that
Call you
crazy
crazy glue.
glue is gonna, yeah, call me crazy glue, but I don't know if crazy glue is the right, I don't think that's board certified, let's put it that way.
I don't
Well,
think so.
despite the fact that many of his patients were happy with their care, an extremely concerning number were harmed and abandoned by the doctor, and many filed complaints against him with the medical board. So
I
very
bet.
uns yeah, I would imagine that they
I
would.
mean,
So
crazy glue is a little. I see if they use cr crazy glue to stop something when you're in like a crisis or something, but it's
yeah.
not something that you should have like a doctor use because they should have
No.
preparatory
No.
materials. Well, in 1977, Dr. Brown's license was revoked by the California State Medical Board for gross negligence, specifically for performing gender affirmation surgery as an outpatient procedure in an office that was not equipped for surgery. So not only is he letting these people go, the place that he's at is not right. And as a
Right.
reminder, his office was a garage, so that does make sense.
Right, exactly.
Instead of reevaluating his practice, Dr. Brown decided to begin practicing medicine in Mexico. He moved south to San Diego, about 10 minutes from the Mexican border, 20 minutes, give or take, so that he could continue operating without a license.
So he would like cross the border essentially
Right,
and
every
do his
day
work
and do
there.
that. Again, I'm not unsure that that doesn't happen today,
No, I'm
especially,
sure
you
it
know,
does.
like,
Yeah.
so obviously not all of them people, not all of them are murderers, which is also what I'm trying to distinguish here, but
Right.
you know, because he was located so close to the border, and I'm not even saying murder, I'm just saying someone, something sussy, because he was located so close to the border, it was fairly easy, though highly inadvisable, for Americans to enter Mexico, receive his medical services, then return home same day.
Right.
However, John seemed to have no way of funding his new medical business venture, and his new practice stayed small until 1982 when he met Pat Baxter. Pat was another resident of San Diego who ran a surgical practice in Mexico. He had the funds to expand his practice and was looking for more doctors to join in. Pat seemed not to mind John's unethical way of treating patients and suggested the two of them pool resources and begin a partnership. The new practice simply thrived, and thousands of people traveled across the border for an inexpensive surgery.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that thousands of people are looking for that kind of surgery.
Listen, when you're desperate.
That's what I mean, yeah.
I mean, people joke about, and this is not to be crass, right? But I'm just using this sort of an egregious example of, like, there's a reason the coat hanger is the symbol for getting an abortion.
Yeah.
You know, it's not meant to be funny. It's meant to say, like,
right.
I will use a coat hanger if I have to, which is just gruesome. Yeah, totally. If I must. And so, I, you know, not to necessarily equate the two.
No, but I see
think
what
when
you're
in desperate situations,
yes.
Especially when you want to be yourself.
Right.
I don't think you're thinking of it being, I'm going to Mexico or I'm in a garage, or I think you're like, I want this off of me or in me or out of me or whatever the fuck.
And it's life altering, you know, like that's how important that type of stuff is. So it is, I think that is a good comparison, as tragic as that can be for people. While John continued to hone his gender affirmation surgical techniques, also offering his patients breast implants, facelifts, liposuction, silicone injections, and even penile implants, it wasn't long before tales of this sensational new operation made their way to the United States again. In January of 1986, when I was born, Penthouse Forum ran an article. For those who don't know, Penthouse was like the magazine, like similar to like Playboy back in the day.
And this article came out when John was born, just saying.
So
maybe no relation.
But they Penthouse Forum actually ran an article titled, quote, "The Incredible Dick Doctor," end quote, which recounted an unsettling incident that took place during a penile surgery. Now, as we were doing this research, Megan did this research. Shout out to Megan. I was skimming through and I was like, I kind of remembered this situation. So get ready. This is a little bit unsettling. Apparently, Dr. Brown actually accidentally made an incision into the patient's penile shaft, which caused blood to spatter everywhere, to which the doctor stated, quote, "I made a boo-boo."
I made a boo-boo.
I'm a baby doing penile implants. Soon after, Darren's laughing. It's not funny, actually. It's really horrific.
I'm laughing at John. I'm just laughing at John.
No, I know.
I shouldn't make jokes.
But soon after, the television show Inside Edition, which I think we all know and remember, opened an investigation into Dr. Brown's practice and patient care. The team and the producers traveled down to Mexico to visit his office. And this is the part that I'm remembering. During the visit, the crew captured footage of a patient waking up during a scalp flap surgery, which I don't even know what that is.
I don't want to know what a scalp flap surgery is.
It sounds very Hannibal Lecter. I don't know. I just don't like the way that sounds. I don't like the word flip-flop, so scalp flap really is just throwing me. It was carried out to give the patient a more feminine hairline. And during the procedure...
There's feminine hairlines?
Well, yeah. I mean, guys have certain...
Actually, like, I mean, you mean if you're that, like balding, like I understand if you're balding and women aren't necessarily balding, like they don't have the whatever, but right now you and I both have a full head of hair. Like what is different about our hair?
I don't know. That's a good, I was like thinking there's a difference. And then as you asked that, I was like, wait, no, there must
but
not
maybe,
be. I don't know.
Yeah,
there's something, whatever it was.
Right.
But during the procedure, the patient awoke from sedation and began moaning and screaming. And this was, by the way, I'm just to reinforce here, Inside Edition is capturing this. So though Dr. Brown assured the production crew that this was, quote, perfectly normal, the journalist broadcast the shocking footage on national television, prompting the start of a criminal investigation. The FBI, of course, got involved, took John into custody, seized his assets, and although he had been performing the surgeries themselves in Mexico, he had actually been scheduling patients using a San Diego-based phone number, which gave law enforcement the jurisdiction to file charges against him. Now, we have done this show, we've done a version of the show, we've done podcasting and true crime for all these years. And I was surprised by this. I was like, oh, yeah, you can't be doing business with American phone lines. You know, this was one of those times where I was like, oh, this, you know, my true crime acumen continues to grow because I just hadn't thought of something like that.
And it's also easy to kind of slip up at, you know, like you could be registered in, let's
Yeah,
say,
for sure.
Tijuana. I'm just using an example. You could register in Tijuana, pay your taxes
Yeah.
wherever, you know, you're a resident of, in theory. I guess some of those go to California, but yeah, I guess maybe using the phone number is going to be, yeah.
If part of your
Yeah.
business is happening in the United States,
Right.
there you go. Well, as you might expect, John was tried and sent to prison for 3 years. Again, this is just for the whole, you know, medical, doing the
Malpractice.
wrong kind of
Yeah, right.
business type of thing. So John tried and was sent to prison for 3 years, serving only 18 months of his sentence.
And by the time John was released, Pat Baxter had severed ties and moved on, and Dr. Brown was left on his own. After his release from prison, John spent a year as a taxi driver before reopening his surgical practice in Tijuana in 1992. He opened a clinic called the New Woman Surgical Center. Wow, what a. I guess it's not for trans men.
Men, maybe not. Yeah, it sounds like probably not.
He opened a clinic called the New Woman Surgical Center under the assumed name of Dr. Ralph Molina. The conditions of this office were markedly worse than his prior facilities, which I can't imagine because they were in a garage. Dr. Brown was known to eat and drink while performing surgeries, and one would-be patient paid a visit to the center but changed her mind, later stating, quote, "The sewers overflowed once or twice a day,"
Oh
saying, "I
my
remember seeing him
God.
walking down the hallway eating raw weenies right out of the package. A fucking package of weenies," end
Of
quote. That's not
weenies.
even my own emphasis.
That's
That's a
not
direct
Darren. That's
quote.
a quote that we have researched.
In his new office, running water was never a guarantee in the building, while surgeries took place
Ugh.
in a bedroom or an OBGYN chair. Is the
Yeah.
bedroom in an OBGYN chair better than an operating table in
You
the
want to think
garage?
it might be more cozy, but at the end of the day, neither situation is going to end in a good way.
I wouldn't trust a doctor who was eating a package of hot dog weenies.
Or anything, but
But
especially weenies,
no,
you
but like
know?
raw weenies? No. Cook the weenies.
Yeah, and yeah, cook the
A
weenies, grill the
fucking
weenies.
package of weenies.
I don't know. This is getting really disgusting
I
fast.
can't. Yes.
So on May 11th, 1998, the deceased body of 79-year-old Philip Bondi was discovered inside the room of a Holiday Inn in San Diego. Now, Philip had undergone a leg amputation very recently, and his
Whoa.
surgical site was gruesome and infected. Ugh, that's just so gross. The medical examiner determined that Philip had died of gangrene, a bacterial
Oh.
infection that causes tissue death, brought on by a lack of blood flow in the area to the body, and often seen as seen after a surgical procedure.
Did you ever see Requiem for a Dream?
I don't think I have. No. Does
Not that
something
this
like
is
this
exact. It's
happen?
no. It's well. It's drug related. It's just like
Oh, okay.
overeating and drugs. But
Yeah.
anyway, they have a scene, and it's listen. It's an adult movie, but they have a scene where Jared
Yeah.
Leto just keeps stabbing the same place to have
Ugh.
heroin, and it's like all infected. And I, whenever I think about something like that, I
Ugh.
think about that scene from Requiem for a
I
Dream.
would too. That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Well, this hotel room where this body was found was horrific. Philip's wheelchair had been upended, his phone knocked off the nightstand, his sheets pulled off of the bed, and he had clearly tried and had failed to seek help before succumbing to the infection that ended his
Oof.
life. A friend informed authorities that Philip had been in a taxi accident during a recent trip to Mexico, and his leg had needed to be removed as a result of his injuries. Now, San Diego police contacted the Mexican authorities, who had no record of Philip or a car accident like the one that he had described. Among Philip's possessions in his hotel room, though, investigators found two receipts, each for $5,000. One receipt was just for, quote, surgery. The other was for, quote, hospitalization. And both were signed by none other than John Brown. So, Police brought Dr. Brown in. If he's even a doctor at this point, do we know? I don't know. He had his license, then he didn't have his license, then they revoked a license. Let's see where this plays out. But Dr. Brown, for lack of a better term there, and was brought in for questioning and immediately offered to make a statement. By the time they were through their first round of questioning, police had taken 29 pages of notes
Jesus.
and still had no idea actually why Philip's leg had been amputated. However, they were fairly sure that some sort of illegal activity had been involved and that
Yeah.
John Brown was placed under arrest and charged with involuntary manslaughter. I mean, he was clearly the person that did
I mean,
this.
well, obviously, the case made the news and caught the attention of a transgender author and activist named Dallas Denny. Great name. Dallas knew a number of people who had been operated on by Dr. Brown and had seen some of the awful conditions patients of Dr. Brown were left in. Dallas had spent years warning people of the doctor's surgical practices. And when she caught wind of the case and realized John was somehow connected to the mysterious amputation, Dallas contacted the San Diego prosecutor and explained something
Smart.
called
I want to say this is called apotemnophilia.
Apotemnophilia.
There you go.
Apotemnophilia, also known as BIID, so BID, which is body integrity identity disorder. And it's an extremely rare psychological condition where a person experiences a compulsion to amputate a healthy limb. I have heard of this before.
Have you?
BID is sometimes a sexual fetish or linked to sexual arousal, but it's sometimes a non-sexual psychological compulsion. I actually have heard of this before. And according to Dallas, Dr. Brown had been performing amputations on people with BID since the 70s. Investigators learned that Philip had been in touch with Dr. Brown by a friend who also had BID, and Philip had visited John earlier in the week to have his leg removed and was happy with the procedure. And in theory, if everything is voluntary,
Yeah, no.
right? Then no harm, no foul. Even if it's not the smartest idea, like I've said on the show many times, like I own my body. I should be able to do with what I want with it. If I want to amputate my leg with a butter knife, I'm not
Oh,
recommending.
that just gave me
But
chills.
in theory, I own my body and I should be able to do it.
It's true.
Now, Dr. Brown disposed of the leg in the Mexican desert. Obviously,
Horrible.
that's where all of them go. Then drove Philip to the Holiday Inn in San Diego, where he helped him learn to walk with crutches. Just before abandoning him kind of completely, casually, later to die of infection because,
Just whatever,
the leg's chopped off, obviously.
Well, once the DA was able to clearly see the full picture here of what had happened to Philip, they increased the charge against John to implied malice murder in the second degree. Now, this charge applies in cases where the defendant knows an act is dangerous to human life, but does it anyway. I mean, it kind of counters what you were saying a little bit there, Darren, because it does sound like, this person came to him with a want and he followed through with it. Are there
Doesn't have
ethical
to be rational.
questions? But well, authorities searched Dr. Brown's home and office where they found hundreds of his possessions covered in blood. They found used needles, dozens of empty tubes of crazy glue, Darren. Darren's making a face, and blood-covered towels and sheets soaking in a bathtub full of bleach.
This is obviously terrible. When you're talking, it reminded me, do you remember that show, I Want a Famous Face? On MTV,
Vaguely,
maybe.
yes,
And
vaguely,
you'd like go in and you'd be like,
yes.
I want to look like Angelina Jolie. And
Britney
they'd
Spears,
get like,
yes.
And in theory, right? There was always like complications. You're doing something to your face. Granted, maybe not life or death like amputation, but you're doing something to your face that isn't really probably advised. What's the
What
implication
is
there? Is someone doing something wrong with plastic surgery when you give people size X breast implants and they're like have back issues? Like, I don't. Obviously, this is more serious because it's amputation, but what is the line of I get to be an idiot with my body,
No, that's true. I don't know. Maybe there are laws too, that there is a line. Maybe there is a
Well, there is.
line
You can't
in
just
that way.
donate an organ, to you can't
Good
just like
point.
sell your organ, excuse me, you can't just like sell your organ on the black market. I can't just sell my
Good
kidney on the
point.
black market. So there is that, right?
That's a
But
good point. Yeah.
it's just interesting.
Well, also within all of this really unsettling stuff, they also uncovered some very graphic videotapes of Dr. Brown performing experimental surgeries on patients who were essentially being used as guinea pigs.
Jesus.
John narrated his way through many of these videotapes, as though they were meant to be used as teaching tools. However, he often had trouble pronouncing or even remembering the medical terminology that he was trying to use.
This is the liver here. This is the liver. We got the spleni.
The liver. I was like, wait, what? We're going live on Facebook? No, the liver. Right, exactly. This detail I think alludes to what I was saying earlier, which is like, was he slowly kind of in a cognitive decline? And like, you don't want your surgeon to be cognitively declining in any
Because
way.
in
So
theory, like minus the care, he's actually performing surgeries like
that are helping
that people
people.
would consider to be
Yeah.
almost heroic in
No,
theory.
I know.
Obviously, it's
That's true.
disgusting, but aside all that, you
Yeah,
know?
right. Well, the conditions depicted on these tapes were horrifically dirty. Surgical incisions were being held open using push pins. The surgical tools were dull and unclean, and the open wounds themselves were clearly not sanitized. So just,
Horrendous.
it's really horrendous. Exactly.
Well, at trial, all the men present were extremely uncomfortable, including the judge, who asked the prosecutor in earnest if he really needed to watch the tapes being shown as evidence. I would probably ask the same thing.
I think I
Maybe I
would
just
too.
take it for granted, take it for as it is. Now, the prosecution had a surprisingly difficult time finding witnesses to testify against the doctor. Huh. Many of his patients were impossible to locate or contact, I bet, or wouldn't admit having the surgery.
Well,
Some
right.
were extremely wary of police, worried they would be in trouble for having the illegal surgery, let alone wanting to admit it.
Right.
Now, the defense tried to portray John as a well-meaning doctor who had a passion for helping people that society had simply rejected. And in many ways, that was not entirely untrue. In
And by
their
the way,
closing,
were you his lawyer? It sounds like maybe you were the lawyer here.
Maybe I need to practice a little bit, you know?
Maybe you do. Maybe you do.
In their closing arguments, remember I was defending Ed Kemper.
I know. We've got
Let
to
us not
really take another
forget.
look at you on this show, I think.
Let's not take, hey, my name's not John, and I wasn't
Yeah,
born
fair
in
enough.
whatever. Now, in their closing arguments, the defense stated, quote, "No one else would deal with transsexuals." John Brown said, quote, "I'll deal with them. Did he do this for money? No. He did it because he cared. And if you don't believe that, then you have my permission, as if you needed it, to find him guilty of murder," end quote. Now, the jury deliberated for only one day before indeed finding Dr. Brown guilty of second-degree murder, and he was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison in 1998. John appealed his conviction a number of times, but each attempt was denied. In 2010, not too long ago, Dr. Brown developed a case of pneumonia that rejected antibiotic treatment, and he passed away at the age of 87.
And so we also want to mention, today modern medical standards and protocols for transgender care have been established, guided by extensive research and best practices. And this has led to better preoperative assessments and postoperative care and overall patient outcomes. Of course, there's still a lot that needs to happen for full transgender equality. Thankfully, today there are also more robust legal protections for transgender individuals, including anti-discrimination laws and policies that ensure access to gender-affirming healthcare. These legal safeguards have been instrumental in making transgender medical practices more accessible and safer. I mean, that's really the gist of all of
Yeah.
this, is like, however, I might want to be like really helpful to somebody, and perform, ear removal surgery. But am I approved to do that and know how to make everything healthy and happy afterwards? No. So, there are establishments like this and regulations that I think are a big part of this. Reputable medical organizations such as the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, also known as WPATH, have developed comprehensive guidelines and standards for care for transgender health. These guidelines have been widely adopted, promoting safer and more consistent medical practices for transgender individuals. So,
Yeah.
tragically, we hope that this doesn't happen and ever again. But to your point earlier, Darren, I do think that, people don't always want to go through, like, to your point about transgender people, I think that you were kind of pointing to a second ago. Some transgender people don't want the world to know that they're going through that type of stuff. It is an
Right.
identity thing. So we just hope everyone is doing it as safely as possible and looking out for people like Dr. Brown. That would be terrible.
Yes, absolutely. Very interesting case. Sort of a, as I argued, maybe a little bit of a different type of true crime
I agree.
story. But let's get into some listener shout outs, please.
Yeah, I wanted to give a special shout out to my longtime friend and longtime listener of the show, actually. Her name is Amanda. She lives in Morgantown. We got dinner the other night and we were talking about the show, and she was referencing things, Darren, like I forgot about. You know me, I kind of forget everything
Yeah,
about the
me
show.
too.
And I was like, wow, she is such a good friend and like really seems to love the show. She loves you, Darren, and it just
Oh, I
really
love her.
re-energized me. And so yeah, thank you for being such a great friend, Amanda, and I hope you enjoyed your pierogies that we
Oh,
had.
I love a pierogi. Oh,
Me
I love
too.
it. Hi, Amanda. Well, Krista in our Facebook group shared a heartwarming story about her new kitty, posting a
Yes.
pic saying, quote, "I keep forgetting to show mom and dad their new grand radish. Don't be mad at me, dad." Sad face. Everyone meet Sprout. She is
Yeah.
3.9 pounds now, and we saved her from getting eaten by a hawk outside our house.
Oh my
She was
God.
abandoned by her mom. She can't set
Oh.
out of, I hope that doesn't affect her psychologically growing up.
I
She can't
know.
see out of her left eye. It doesn't have full control of her bladder. But other than that, she loves to attack her siblings' tails and bite her human toes. And I love her.
Oh,
Just,
it's
I want you
such a
to know, I
cute
just love
picture.
Sprout. I love her with the little eyes.
I also love the name Sprout. That's such a
She's
cute
so
name for a
cute.
kitty.
I'm
Yeah, check it.
swooning.
And thank you, Krista, for that. Krista's also been a longtime fan. Krista, I'm looking at one of the gifts that you sent to us right now, in fact, next to my desk. So thank you,
Yes, I have it
Krista.
right here.
Give Sprout our little kisses and hugs from mom and
Yeah.
dad. You know, we
And little
love you
tummy
guys.
rubs with the
Yeah.
toe beans. Yeah.
By the way, guys, please sign up for our Patreon. We are starting to share some teases of upcoming episodes there for anyone or everyone at all tiers. If you want to see a quick little, Easter egg, for example, we copied and pasted part of today's episode research onto Patreon for everyone to just, get a tease about how gruesome it was going to be. So you can check out things like that. You can get early access to our episodes before anyone else. You'll basically get the inside scoop of what's going on with our show before anyone else. Darren, you
And
have
guess
some
what? You
other.
can sign
Yeah.
up for as little as $5 a month, or even cheaper if you sign up annually. Love a deal.
Love a good deal. Yes, the annual sign up really is the best deal if you guys
It
want to do
is.
that. And let me say this, we won't get into it just yet, but we are working on something very exciting that Darren and I were just talking about
Just talking about it.
before the start of the show. And you guys on Patreon on all levels, all tiers, are going to be the first to know about it. And this is one of those things that you might want to actually get in on early. I'll just say that. Let's just say Halloween's coming up. That's
There's
as
some
much as I think we
things.
should say, right, Darren? That
I
should be it.
agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. We love you guys. And of course, don't forget to take your vitamins.
And check your pits, especially if you have a penis, and don't eat a fucking package of weenies.
That's a great sign off. Don't, especially if you're doing surgery. You
Don't be
don't want to
eating
be
package of
doing,
weenies
no.
near the sewer at your
Near
doctor's
the
office.
sewer.
Highly, I don't
Exactly.
recommend that. I don't recommend.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.